I read recently one phrase where it says, God created the world and rested. Then God created the man and rested. But when God created the woman, neither God nor man rested. So today's topic, actually, which I am sharing with you, is the woman and the witness of the church. And I know in this context, even in my own context, women are feel and think about that they are not fit for the ministry. Still, I know CRC struggled a lot, Presbyterians struggled a lot, lots of churches struggled a lot, actually. But women are so powerful warriors. They made their way in every place of the world. Even in November 2009, by commanding general of the International Security Assistant Force, Joint Command in the American Army, they formed even the Female Engagement Team, FET, in Afghanistan. Its mission was engaging with Pashtun women and giving them some things actually to help them, but ultimate purpose was winning hearts and minds, to gathering intelligence, to build trust, to understand cultural sensitivity, to learn Afghan hospitality, to build relationship. And they're asking, starting every time when they go, they ask with a simple question: what food do you like to cook? So they always start with the basic human need. And today's our text, which I am pondering, it's John chapter 4, Samaritan woman, the woman at the well. This text is very common. You have heard lots of sermons on that and lots of insights and explanation and expositions. But today, because this text is so rich, so immense, so symbolic, so powerful, it's not possible to unpack it in a 45-35 minute sermon. So I have tried my level best to concise it in a way that we may learn two major things through this. So because I'm a missiologist and a mission student, so I see this is the only text in the Bible where Jesus himself taught a model for mission and even crossing culture in his own geographical era. That was the only one cultural cross mission model which Jesus taught to his disciples. So what we can learn today in a world where immigration and refugees and the parents and the families and all these are, and even in the whole Western world, is so much soaking up people. So let's go into the text. If you have your Bible, stay with me. Chapter 4, please keep it open. If you have Bibles, we will dig in a little bit for a while. So number one, what is the purpose of the gospel? So we need to know that. The author states in chapter 20, verse 31, these things have been written. The purpose of the gospel is that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. So the deity of God, that's the major purpose of gospel, of the Johannine narrative in this year. The second thing which I found is providing a missional model. Mostly people think that Johannine narrative is not a missional model, but this is a powerful missional model. And we will see today how's that. So the first cross-cultural mission to the mission of, or the missionary of God, the purpose, again, John 23, the primary purpose to project Messiah, Christos, Christ, not only his humanity, but his deity also. And how do we approach religious other who are indifferent to gospel? So the theme is, as I mentioned, is the deity of Christ. So what we read in this schedule, if we see that, verse 1, it says that, now when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard Jesus is making more, baptizing more disciples than John, although it was not Jesus who was baptizing, then the verse 4 clearly said, but he had to go through Samaria. He had to go. And we see it's a divine schedule, divine appointment. Although there's a certain background in the context why Jesus had to go, And it was the same connotation to me when Gospel of Luke chapter 2 mentioned that when Jesus was stayed in the temple at the age of 12 and his parents were looking for him and they asked him, why are you departed us? And what he says, why you were looking for, I had to have where? To my father's house. So that was the same connotation actually, which is saying that was a divine schedule, divine appointment over there. So why Samaria? That's the important thing. First of all, if we see the context, we will understand that John starts his gospel, incarnation, logos, anarche, logos, or theos, and then he go from the first chapter, he come to the second chapter where Jesus Christ was in a Galilee attending a wedding. And after wedding, Jesus gone to the Jerusalem and he attended Passover festival. And what Passover festival, what Jesus done? He created the havoc. He upside down the business and all Pharisees and all Sadducees and all the teachers of the law and the watchdog, the whole secret police of the religious watchdogs, they were all watching what's going on in the Jerusalem. Not only they were watching what Jesus is doing, they have already examined what John the Baptist was doing in the Jordan, at the River Jordan. So they also said, what you are doing, who you are. So they were the gatekeepers. So you can understand what's developing now. So Jesus created the havoc. John the Baptist was already challenging the status quo. And you know the language which he used with the Pharisees? I don't need to say here. And then Jesus, again, the second movement was starting. And then in the night time, we see the chapter 3, Nicodemus, the teacher of the law, silently, nightly, he's coming to meet Jesus and asking that who you are. And then we see that. This is the background. So the first thing is, it's a divine appointment to meet there, but there are a background tell us something else also, and which is that another political immunity. If you know that the secret religious police, have you ever, I hope that the church, there's a people who spend as a missionaries in different part of the world, and you might know that what religious secret police is. When you have a department of the religious affairs who watch what's happening religiously. In Pakistan, in the current Islamization, we know that what's the meaning of the religious police. We know in the Saudi Arabia, we know in the Middle East countries, what the secret of the religious police do with the families and the people. So, the same situation. Samaria has also a political and religious immunity, interestingly, because that was untouchable territory, and it was also an area where Jewish authority and Roman authority, they do not interfere with the political or religious culprits. Second, third one, it was divine sovereignty, was in motion to surprise the woman. Not only to surprise the woman, but also surprise the disciples. So we are now in the series here in the Pentecost season, where I know you have heard a lot of about the surprise, Jesus surprise, but we know that Jesus also surprised a couple of times. And most of the time, he's surprised not by Jewish people. He's surprised by non-Jewish people. For example, a Phoenician woman. So Jesus was surprised when he said that it's not good to provide food of the children food to dogs. And then the woman responds, Jesus was stunned actually, and he said, I haven't seen such kind of faith even in the Israelites. The second person, the Roman soldier, Roman officer, when Jesus was in Capernaum, and he says that, come to my home and heal my servant. And then Jesus said, when I will visit Capernaum, he said, no, I do not deserve that you come into my home. And he realized that I am under the Roman authority. What I say, that's happened. And you have a superior authority. If you say from here, my servant will heal in another city. So he knows the powerful authority, how Jesus was working over there. So we see that this is coining the story, actually. Who are the Samaritans? That's an interesting question. Who were these people? So actually, when we read Old Testament and the Kings, 2 Kings, and also Chronicles, it tells us that they were the Israelite descendants of the northern tribe, the separate 10 tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, who survived the destruction of the kingdom of Israel, Samaria, by the Assyrians in 1722 before Christ. So what was the differences? Why they were not related with each other? The Jews actually regarded Samaritan as the worst of the human race and had no dealings with them. So two major things, why was there happened? Number one, when they attacked by the Assyrians and they have been departed from their country, but the people, those who live there, they have been mixed with the other races, mixed races. So that's what's happened. The corrupted and mixed generation, their race was mixed with other races. That was the first allegation. The second allegation was, when they mixed with other races and other religions, then they also corrupt their worship. So the worship was corrupted, and also the race was corrupted. That was the allegation from the Jews, who considered themselves, after post-exile, that they are the pure-blooded Jews. They have their origins. They know who their mothers are. They know who their fathers are. They know the genealogy. But Samaritans, we don't know who you are. You are mixed now. So you can see that the tension over there, in this tension, we see that Jesus is crossing the border. But interesting part is this. You may feel that Jesus has always a soft corner for Samaritans. How? You might see that the Good Samaritan story. The priest, the Levites, they don't care about the human. They care about what their duty is. But the Good Samaritan came. So, and we read the 10 lepers, Luke chapter 20, chapter 10, 10 lepers. The only one came back to say thank you. And who was that? Samaritan. So Jesus knew that they have good heart, but they don't have good head knowledge. They don't have approach how to worship God. On the other way, Jews have a good head knowledge because of the Torah, the temple, and all the prophetic literature, and all the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, all this one, but they don't have heart. They have corrupted their hearts. So that was the tension over there, and Jesus was going there to engage with these people. So why Samaria? If you know the geography, I don't have time to go to geography. You can find out yourself, actually, why Jesus went to Samaria and didn't take the crossroad to go to Galilee. So why Jesus was there? Number one, he was avoiding non-essential encounter with the religious police, because that was not a time. Their time will come when he will encounter, but this is not a time. So that's why he's avoiding. So he's staying and passing through Samaria where religious people have no work to do. So he was staying there. And then because that was a divine schedule already, he had to go. So why he was there? Two things. Number one, as I mentioned, 2M, I call it, 2M reason. Number one, that was he was fulfilling messianic prophecy. And what was that messianic prophecy for the Samaria or for the 10th tribe of Israel, and also providing a mission model to his disciples? So 2M, messianic prophecy and missional model. What is the missional model? I will just give a brief hint to you. It's a metaphor of husband and wife. If you observe the conversation, how the conversation starts from the basic human need, physical to relational, from relational to spiritual, and from spiritual to salvation. That's the whole model, whole pattern which is there. So what was the messianic prophecy, what Jesus was doing? If you know, Jesus was living in a Jonah generation. You know the prophet of Jonah? God sent to Jonah where? To Nineveh. That was the command, actually. And Nineveh was another capital for the which generation, which nation? Assyrians. And they were the mix over there, also Israelite over there. So Jonah refused to go there, but you know, God has his own arrangements and ended up there. But Jesus was living in a Jonah generation who have no connection. They don't want to save these Samaritans. They just want to see them destroy and die. So Jesus was in the Jonah generation, but there was another example from the Old Testament, and that was Hosea, the Gomer. And if you know the Hosea, you know that God was dealing idolatry and he was seeing the idol worship, the corrupt worship of the Israelite, and he relates symbolically with the Gomer, and he says to Hosea, go and marry with whom? Prostitute. And bring her. And then to the symbolic life of the prophet Hosea, God deal with the idolatry with the Samaritan and the Israelite nation in the Old Testament. So that's going on, this one there. And even if you read that, when Pharisees accusing Jesus that why you are relating with the sinners, why you are eating with all these outcasts, and Jesus reminds them, Hosea, what was saying? I seek what? Mercy and acknowledgement of God. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. And this is the direct quotation from where? So Jesus has in mind properly. So we see that the messianic prophecy, he has a divine schedule to meet over there. And then the interesting question is, why women? Why not a man? Why Jesus pick a divine schedule and appointment with a woman? And if you know the history of Jewish rabbinical literature and Jewish rabbinical order, you will find interesting a significance of the woman in the Old Testament narrative. And what's that? So Jesus came out from which festival? Passover, okay. And every Passover was a combination of two things. Number one, every Jewish male or the family was commanded to go to the place. And also, if they are able, they should stay also till which festival? Shavuot, Pentecost. So you can see that here. And the interesting part is that at the festival, Megaloth, the five scroll, Jewish, they read that scroll. And because we are in a Pentecost season, so I will only relate with the Pentecost season here. I will not go to the Passover. The interesting thing is that, can anybody remind which Megaloth read at the Shavuot or the day of Pentecost? Which scroll Jewish read? Come on. Ruth. Book of Ruth. The Megaloth, the five scroll, they will read at the Shavuot, not the Torah. Torah was the regular part. But special feast Megaloth was the book of Ruth. That strike me. Why a Ruth? Why the book of Ruth at the Pentecost? So the interesting thing is, so we see that the stage was set, a well for most profound encounter in the gospel. The edge is the well. Jesus is rested at the well, sixth hour. Well, one other thing. I don't know. I have tried my level best to find out the history and the direct reference or something which donate or which says that the woman was immoral. I never find. And I'm not convinced. With the lots of other explanation that woman was immoral. There are several reasons. Anybody have idea, have you ever lived in a country where well is almost 12-hour walk? Or 4-hour walk? Have you ever lived in that part? We are used to tap hot water, you know. Just woke from the bed and hot water, and then we realize, oh, the water is everywhere. No, that's not a scene. In the Indian state Maharashtra, there they called water wives. Men wedded second or third wife, not because they want children or they want another woman. No. The idea is another young woman at a home just to fetch water to walk 4 hours to go in the well and then come back 4 hours to fetch water and to do the job. And they call water wives. So the interesting part, when I read all, I'm sorry to say, but mostly when I read Western scholar than the Western preacher about saying and then this woman immoral, it sometimes disturbed me, because if you live in that context and you know that, you may take, I don't know what was the distance between, but I'm still not convinced that woman was immoral. She was victimized, might be. She was a victim of the man-made divorce system in the Jewish Palestine. So let's see what's happening. So why women, as I said before? Another thing is important. It's really, really interesting. You know, God made women in a way, they multiply everything. Whatever you give them, what they do? You give them without makeup face, what they do? Multiply it. Okay. You give them empty home or house, what they will do? You know, I lived 1.5 years here alone, and then 1 year in California, and I was living by myself. You know, I just came home to sleep. And everybody who came while I was living alone, they saw the apartment and say, oh. But the same people, when they come to my apartment, when my wife and kids came, they said, oh, really? It's the same apartment? So you can see they multiply everything. Whatever you give to the woman, you give them human seed, they give you children. You give them empty house, they give you a full home. And if you give them trouble, then you're intelligent yourself. So God knows that what's going on. And why well? This is an interesting question. Why well? Okay, the water was the main reason, but the important thing is that I will not go into the other reason of the well, but well was a social dating place. Not like our social media today. It was social dating and mating place. I'll give you 3 examples. Abraham sent his servant Eliezer to go and find a wife for my son Isaac. Where he found? Where Moses found his wife Sapphira. Where Isaac found, okay? Where God speaks to Hagar. The revelation where God revealed to the Hagar at the well. So well is also a symbol of dating and mating, and also a social gathering and a place of revelation in the Old Testament symbolic language. So the primary purpose, there are different purposes, but we also see water, the symbol of water is very powerful in the Bible. We see that the water is, the flowing water is also, if you read Proverbs chapter 5 and chapter 8, Proverbs say that the man and woman, husband and wife relationship is like a flowing water, a fountain, a pure flowing water. That is the Proverbs understanding. So in the Song of the Song, the woman is praised as a garden fountain, a well of living water, Song of the Song chapter 4. So with all this background and symbolic language, now you see a rabbi who sees and who lifts people from physical to spiritual realm, who talk from the physical need and lift people to spiritual area. Now he is talking with the woman at the well and start, and the conversation starts with the water. So this all combinations are there. But Jesus was living in an era where every Jewish, mostly male or rabbinic, pray was, thank God, I am not a Gentile slave or woman. The rabbi Eliezer at that time, he says, rather burn the saying of the Torah than teach them to a woman. Why? Because they thought that woman has a natural disorder of chattering and lie. That was the understanding. So they don't believe. Even today in the Muslim world, you know, the woman testimony in a court, it's not considered a full. It's a half. Until 2 women say one same thing in a court trial. Still, it's Islamic Sharia law. So we see that in this context, Jesus was crossing and he was crushing rabbinical code. He was crossing. And even a rabbi, mostly at that time, they called bleeding rabbis, because they hit while they're walking, looking at the at the floor. They hit sometime to the wall. They hit sometime to somebody else because they don't put eye on a woman. And even they are not allowed to talk with the woman, even their own wife, in a public space. So in this context, Jesus is talking to the woman at where? At public gathering, social gathering space. That was a total breach of the rabbinic law. And he was crossing border. So women can't vote. Even in our own country here, USA, you see that till 1920, the woman cannot vote. That's just here. Still, lots of churches are struggling. 2 weeks ago, in our Christian Reformed Church in Artesia City, which I'm planting, we ordain our first deacon, and she's a woman. So we ordain that woman also. So women's role in patriarchal culture, we all know that. But today's first scripture reading, we realize that we remind four women who changed the history of the Israel. You know, the two midwives who spared the Moses' mother, Pharaoh's daughter, and Moses' sister. Five women. They challenged the whole state, and they defy the law, and they change the course of history. But the interesting part is the book of Ruth. I'm concluding now because I don't have enough time. If you read the last chapter of the book of Ruth, surprise is there. What surprise is there? And I'm going to read. What surprise is there? If we read Ruth chapter 4, verse 11, and the woman came to the Naomi and what's saying? We are witness. The Lord make the woman who is coming to your house like Rachel and Leah. They didn't mention Jacob. Whom they mentioned? Rachel and Leah, the two who built the house of Israel. Who built the house of Israel? Woman. Number two, and may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Verse 12, may your house be like the house of praise, whom Tamar bore Judah. Wow. If you know the story of Tamar, oh my gosh, you can't even give her your church membership. She bore a son from her father-in-law. But why? That is an astonishing story. How that woman stood up for his right, for her right, and she changed the whole course of the house of Israel. And not only to praise from whom Tamar bore Judah, because of the offspring which the Lord will give you for this young woman, and you know, who was born from Ruth and Boaz? The grandfather of King David. So Ruth is a female counterpart of Abraham, who left everything for God, for God's people, following. And Tamar, the establisher of the house of Israel, Judah, and then Ruth, the birth of the kingdom from tribalism to a united kingdom. Two women changed the course of history, Israelite nation. And Jesus, being a rabbi, he knows what is the role of woman and what woman can do. And you can see, Tamar, even they have almost 1,000 years, or might be less than 1,000 year gap, but there are striking similarities. They were both women, they were both widow, they were both childless, and you know, what was the law? To whom you help and support at the festival and remember? Three things. Stranger. Number two, widow. And number three, orphan. These women, they fall in the same, they were the worst of the worst. So in this context, we see that Jesus provided a missional model to his disciple. And that's why he picked women. So the lesson is, a society depends on acts of kindness, morality, hospitality, generosity, moral strength without those human values, stories of families, doesn't matter to God. And these women, they got a reward for performance of their act of kindness. And do you know, when Ruth went to Boaz, what Boaz told her, if you remember the story, he said, "We know what you've done to the living and to the dead." What she was doing with the dead. Because that was woman's responsibility to bore the child of the deceased husband and carry on the name. So that was an act of strike loyalty. That was the kindness with the dead also. Because the firstborn child in this leverage marriage, the kin who will release them, that continue the name of the deceased family, deceased husband. And because in the story of Boaz, the close kin refused to help. In the story of the Samaritan woman, the close kin, the Judah, the family, the bloodline, they refused to support, they refused to give them respect, they refused to give them a place in the society, even in their worship, and they were marginalized from the house of God. There was no mercy in the Jewish heart for the Samaritan. There was no kindness in the heart of the Jews for the Samaritans. And Jesus meeting at the well, and Jesus crossed 4 R. I'm not going to unfold that, but first, rank. He crossed his rank. Number 2, he crossed his race. Number 3, he crossed the reason. He didn't judgmental. He was not judgmental to the woman. He was gradually taking her to a point where she realized to whom she's talking. He never judged her. The relational, the husband, and then to the religion, prophet and mountain and the temple. And Jesus gave the profound revelation at the well to the, again, woman. And what was that? "I am the Messiah to whom you were waiting. You say this mountain, or Jewish say this mountain, but time will come that God is not going to be worshipped on a mountain. God seeks worshipers from the heart." So it doesn't matter. And God and Jesus was telling her, "You Samaritans have that the salvation is from the Jews. You have kind heart. You have kindness, but you don't have a proper head knowledge. So I am giving you and balancing you that bringing you here." So the closing remarks, Jesus crossed social taboos. Jesus crossed lots of things. And the disciples came, and they again talk, "Have you eaten something?" So you can understand what's going on. There was no difference between the disciple and the woman. She asked about the water. They were asking about food. They were also unaware that why he's here, and the woman was also unaware to whom she's talking until she realized who is in front of her. And then she ran. The final point which I'm bringing her is the woman testimony and the transformed status. As I mentioned before, women were not supposed to talk a man in the public place, rather than she was talking with the rabbi and the Jewish and at a public place. So you can see the degree of tension in that story. But the interesting part is that when women came, disciples were out, and when disciples came, women were back to village. So that's a striking story over there. But she left her pot. Different things, I can't go there. But the most part is this. Why she left the pot might be, that's another story, another sermon. But the concluding part is this. The transformed status of the woman who gave her courage to remove her shame while talking with the highest and the highest of the rank of the society, to talking a man at the public, that gave her a power and a courage to go and talk the man at the public place at the gate of the village. So one man encounter transformed her to talk with the group of men and the leaders in her own village. And she brought all the men. And another striking thing you will see there, Jesus also sent disciples to the city to bring food. They came empty-handed. The woman also went to the village, but she came what? With a bunch of folks. They all saved. So my dear brother and sisters, we see that Tamar, Ruth, unconventional stories. Both share same character. God does not want any military or miracle heroes. Heroes are not born. They are made. And they are made by a woman of a strength of character, God-fearing, and loyalty, who take risk on the behalf of the God's command and the continuity of the family. So Tamar, the mother of Judaism, and the Ruth, Moabite, the mother of the united tribal from the kingdom, the beginning of the kingdom, are both are strangers. Their kindness and loyalty, two outsider women, adopted Judaism and its values, became the key protagonist, confirmed Jewish values. So Samaritan women, half-breed, a woman unclean since from her birth. How dare you are talking about the Samaritan woman and talking with her? Christian gospel is rooted in a message, not in a messenger. That's why God always picks a people or families or nations or a person which is least expected by the norms of the society. People will think that, oh, that's not possible. Is there a good things come from the Nazareth? Oh, no, no. So this is the story. So I hope this story is a reminder that the people whom we hardly noticed became the heroes of the history. An incredibly powerful story that one strong woman win the souls and saved her village. Strong woman who made strong nations and society. We should never write off a person on the basis of a rank, religion, or resources. In God's schema, the most beautiful deeds done from the people we hardly notice and expect. So let's honor and be kind and hospitable and show the strength of the character and the calling of the church and the strong witness of the church to whom those God brought to our doors, to our neighborhood, to our country. As we are already doing, let us be inspired by Samaritan woman, the heroine of Samaria, to show loyalty and kindness to strangers, and we will be living the great tradition. May God bless all of you.